Everyone, welcome back to the Hardware News Recap for the week. In this one, Valve has some updates on the timing for its Steam Machine, Steam Frame, and Steam Controller 2, not actually called 2. They talk about price, but they don't actually name one. Valve basically says it's going to be really hard to set a price right now, and that the memory and storage situation is causing them problems. Really not a surprise. Notepad++ had an issue where some specific downloads were being redirected to a malware vector for high-value targets. We talked about that. There are potential 50 Super Series. Well, not potential at this point. 50 Super Series has been delayed. Just a question of how long or if it ever comes out. And potential 60 Series delays. ASRock and AMD X3D failures back in the news. Good news. ASRock is monitoring the situation. They've really done a whole lot of monitoring for over a year now. But they're monitoring it harder than ever before. Also, raw material prices are going up. So, yay. It's a material other than just memory, but it is something that goes into sticks of memory. Before that, this video is brought to you by APNX and the V2 case, which uses a skeletal-like structure and tempered glass for a showcase PC. Although the front, side, and top are tempered glass, the APNX V2 uses a perforated right side panel with fan mounts basically everywhere that's not a motherboard. The rear of the case also features large holes with optional additional fan mounts for a potential exhaust path. The case also has a central spine with a wrapping cable management cover that gives builds in the case a unique look. APNX's V2 has some modularity as well, such as swappable power supply and storage trays along the backside of the case. Learn more about the APNX V2 at the link in the description below.
Really quick GN update on the AI Dystopia campaign. So we're about to close it. I'm going to close it sometime in the middle of next week. So if you wanted to jump in on any of those backer tiers, you should do it now because I'm going to close those. We're doing one more round, as I said, of the Ghost tier Q&A sessions, and I'm going to send that email invite out to everybody. And we've done some work on the back end to also try to not get caught in like spam filters so that people who sign up for it probably want to do the Q&A. So doing everything we can to get in front of you, but you should also add Gamers Nexus as a whitelist name to your filters, your inbox, to make sure you get it. Anyway, we're about to close those tiers. We have most of the orders have gone out at this point, other than anyone who's ordered more recently. And then additionally, the wallpapers for this campaign are fully done. So some of them are behind me. Andrew spent a couple weeks working on these. They're awesome, actually. So just some really fun behind the scenes. But he built a 3D city in Blender during our Black Market campaign that we did, where we had special wallpapers for that series of coverage too, where we flew to Asia, bounced around for 3 weeks and covered the GPU Black Market. And he basically expanded that city sort of footprint with new stuff. So like on this, there's a CPU cooling tower and it's a shot down, like a highway, except it's made out of like traces and cables and stuff. So it's got towers that look like skyline, skyscraper type stuff. You can see memory sticks here as bridges. And it's really cool, so very creative. And this is actually a preview to something else we have coming out in the next few months, so you'll wanna stay tuned for that. But anyway, those wallpapers are gonna go out via email to everyone who signed up for any of the AI Dystopia campaign tiers. So in addition to the other wallpapers that are on the USB key, which is also going to everybody on those tiers, those have separate wallpapers, you'll also get these as a download, plus whatever physical products come with the different tiers that you buy. So anyway, we're closing all that next week just to kind of wrap it up and get everything shipped out, delivered, posted online, stuff like that. Close the last Q&A session and deliver on everything. And then we'll get our last couple videos out for the series as well. We've actually expanded it. I don't know, we may keep expanding it. Good news and bad news. Good news, lots of content. Bad news, lots of content about stuff that's not good news. But anyway, we've got the big data center piece that we're working on piecing together. We're almost done with another investigator. Can't really go into detail on that one right now, but it's almost wrapped at this point. We just got the music tracking done by Aaron Pauly from Of Mice and Men. So we hired him to write some specific cyberpunk dystopia style music for this one video, and it is fucking awesome. Working with actual musicians for this stuff rather than just purely kind of doing the usual pay for a license and download it from, you know, just basically a stock music site. It's so cool to work with a musician on it. So really excited about that one in particular, just because of the music, honestly. And actually, you know what? I'll put a trailer together. We'll put it in here so you can check it out. So this is for a story that involved us flying to the UK. We thought we'd close this sooner than we ended up closing it out. But that's because as we continued digging, the entities we were investigating continually fucked themselves over by cornering themselves. Or, as an example, one of them accidentally sent us an email that involved a crisis response plan for how to respond to Gamers Nexus with all of their optional statements. We'll talk about that more in the video. But anyway, here's a trailer for that story. It involves a police raid in the UK of a man who had developer kits from Sega and from what we, well, what we can share right now, it looks to be potentially Nintendo involved as well. So here's a look at that. The beginning of this dystopic tale starts with Sega Europe. Sega Europe hired a contractor to clear out its corporate office prior to moving, leaving this mess of e-waste on the floor for a cleanup crew. From there, the dev kits ended up with Darius, who scrapes together a living, buying and hoping he can resell the junk that ends up in export yards before it's shipped to Africa for refurb or scrapping.
Yeah, man, I get this stuff all day long.
Can you close the gate?
No, it's fine. Right, this is all cool. We can curate the boxes however you want to curate them for the video.
Like any business, he has some big hits and a lot of misses in the trade. This particular lot from Sega was a hit. It was worth a lot of money. He had it publicly listed, at which point it was reserved by the Video Game Preservation Museum in London, a registered museum, to be sold for £60,000.
Is this the one? Yes, it is.
Okay.
So these are actually Sega cards.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, history is at stake.
I was shocked to open the door at 7 o'clock in the morning and see 10 police officers.
Jeez.
And I'm just like, what? Have you got the right address? And then he's like, dev kit. And I'm just like, what? Money laundering? Dev kit? What is going on here? I was like, mate, I bought them in a scrapyard. This is all scrap. Everything you're seeing is scrap that's been thrown away in the UK.
This isn't a story about video games. It's about corporate negligence, overreach, and public-private collusion, such as between the police and corporations. It's about alleged theft of trade secrets, intellectual property, and allegations of money laundering. And all along the way, everyone blamed someone else. Anyway, that's coming up. So if you want to support us for that campaign and that video coming up, you can go to store.gamersaccess.net before we close the back around for this one. And really excited to deliver on everything and just close it out. So thank you for the support. And let's go on to the first story for this week. So Valve has some updates immediately following an AMD earnings call where Lisa Su, maybe unbeknownst to Valve, talked a little bit about Valve's timelines for the Steam Machine, Steam Frame, and controller. Valve posted a press release detailing the same, but with more detail. Quote, when we announced these products in November, we planned on being able to share specific pricing and launch dates by now, but the memory and storage shortages you've likely heard about across the industry, oh yeah, have rapidly increased since then. The limited availability and growing prices of these critical components mean we must revisit our exact shipping schedule and pricing, especially around Steam Machine and Steam Frame. Our goal of shipping all three products in the first half of the year has not changed, but we have work to do to land on concrete pricing and launch dates that we can confidently announce, being mindful of how quickly the circumstances around both of those things can change. We'll keep you updated as much as we can as we finalize those plans as soon as possible. End quote. The rest of Valve's blog post addressed some frequently asked questions. We'll quickly cover some of those. So starting with the Steam Frame, they said, they expect SteamOS's built-in browser to work with streaming services in a theatrical browser mode. Lighthouse base station compatibility isn't something Valve is working on, but Valve pointed out that the Frame's modular and extensible, as they call it, nature will allow third parties and the community to build whatever features they want. Valve says that people who wear glasses shouldn't have issues using the Frame, depending on the size of the glasses. The company also said in its FAQ that it's looking into manufacturing prescription lens inserts ahead of launch, but isn't ready to share details. Valve also restated the definition of the differences between foveated rendering and foveated streaming. This is something that we've already covered extensively with Valve's engineering team in depth in a separate piece. So if you're curious, you can check out our previous interviews with them. Valve's Index head-mounted display will continue to receive support on an ongoing basis, they say. There's a limited supply of Steam Frame dev kits available for developers. And on the Steam Machine FAQ, Valve says the, quote, majority of Steam titles play great at 4K 60 FPS with FSR on Steam Machine, end quote. And Valve says some games require more upscaling than others, and it, quote, may be preferable to play at a lower frame rate with VRR to maintain a 1080p internal resolution, end quote. We'll talk about this more once we actually have one, but just really not happy about advertising 4K 60 with the gigantic fucking asterisk that it's got FSR enabled. This is really not any better than when AMD and when NVIDIA do it. It is misleading. That's not what that is. Like, it's just, at least they say it's with FSR, but so does NVIDIA when it makes the fucked up bar charts for MFG. So anyway, not a fan of that marketing. But Valve is, quote, working on HDMI VRR variable refresh rate, investigating improved upscaling and optimizing ray tracing performance in the driver, end quote. Valve will share specs and CAD files for the Steam Machine's faceplate so that third parties and the community can make their own. And Valve restated that the SODIMM and SSD slots are user serviceable, which we already knew. That's in our original report. Finally, Valve clarified that the Steam controller will work with any game that's compatible with the Steam overlay. All right, so getting into kind of the news of this, which is really just the pricing situation, it's hard for Valve to lock something in on prices with how much they've changed over the last 2 months. 5 months in particular, we've seen swings of 5 to 6x increase for memory cost in some of these situations, going up from just like a couple weeks ago, I was saying 3 to 5x. Now we're starting to say 5 to 6. Like, it is actually the worst I've ever seen it. I've been in this industry for 17 years, more or less, covering it anyway. Maybe a little less on the hardware side, but still close to like probably 15 years of really focused hardware coverage, 17 total. And I have never seen it this bad this fast. Valve is also having to grapple with this. This is something that companies like Apple in particular, but also kind of Dell and HP, have a little bit of an advantage on, which is that they have established relationships with the memory suppliers and they have contracts. Some of those can be locked in long term right now. That seems less likely. But anyone who has had a contract that they're still in for memory prices, or who could lock in a new memory contract for some kind of fixed price, they're going to have a lot easier of a time setting a price target for a product that they're not launching yet, because they can lock in the memory price, which is the biggest change factor right now. We're not sure if Valve is large enough as a hardware vendor to do that. I mean, I would imagine they get far less favorable terms than Apple, like anyone would. What's not clear to us is if they get terms at all, basically. So anyway, even if Valve is able to get the Steam Machine onto shelves only, let's say, 1 month after they mass produce the first batch, which would be a really quick turnaround involving air freight, the PC part picker memory price trend helps to show why even that would be difficult to project out long-term for pricing. 2x16GB kits of DDR5-5600 have climbed to almost $500 as of February, with a late December price of $400 and a late November price of about $350 on average. The September price for this same chart was $100. That is 5 times in 4 months. SSD prices have also been rough. A 1TB NVMe SSD has gone up to around $220, $230 on average in February, from a mid-December price of $150 and early October price of $100. The unpredictability is the real problem here for Valve, like it would be for any business. Based on the first paragraph in Valve's statement, the company may be willing to release the Steam controller first, since it doesn't use the in-demand chips. In AMD's recent earnings call for Q4 2025, CEO Lisa Su implied the Steam Machine's launch would be sooner rather than later.
From a product standpoint, Valve is on track to begin shipping its AMD-powered Steam Machine early this year, and development of Microsoft's next-gen Xbox featuring an AMD semi-custom SoC is progressing well to support a launch in 2027.
So anyway, for Valve, obviously the memory in the SSD situation is going to be awful, because there's a few things at play where, one, they don't want to set an MSRP that's as low as they're willing to take for their margin, and then in a month have to increase it. That's just going to look bad. They also probably don't want to set it too high, and then no one buys it because it's too high, because they're trying to factor in cost increases, let's say, 3 months from now, which who the fuck knows what that would be at this point. But even if it's another, I don't even want to guess, man. Like, even if it's another 20% on top of what it is now, which if you put that absolute number against, say, 5 months ago, is still an insane increase, that would be enough to fuck their prices. So I'm really not sure what they're going to do to deal with this. They're probably going to have to set high and then just hold there for a while and hope that they've baked in enough to absorb costs. They probably will. But then they're going to get destroyed for the pricing and for the value at the launch. And then, like, later on, it would kind of look better than it did initially. That would be my guess, but I don't know. Maybe otherwise, they'd have to do like a variable pricing model or something where it's like a certain price for each batch. Really not sure. The memory situation is really bad, but the bare bones kits, if they sell them initially, should be the most price stable because there's no memory or SSDs in typically in a bare bones kit. If they're going to include one of those two and everything, then the price is going to continue to be a problem. Up next, the memory situation has been worse than we've ever seen it, but good news, it's not alone. So the high cost of memory, it's not going to be lonely. It's also accompanied by now high cost of GPUs. We talked about this last week, but after about a year of steadily improving GPU prices, which was excellent news to see. We're really happy to report on it in November when we published a video called GPU Prices Fall Before Inevitable Opportunity to Screw Consumers, I think we called it. That opportunity has arrived, and now even that isn't the only additional problem from memory. CPUs look like they may also start becoming problematic to get. It's all coming together. Hang on, I'll be right back. It's over here. Sequestering away all of the hardware to pull it into data centers so that you can't own anything. It's starting to work. The data center companies and AI and the spies on my phone when it mysteriously shut down the other day, that's not a backdoor. They can't read my brain when I'm wearing this. So anyway, we should probably sell these on the store pretty soon. Tinfoil hat sale. Anyway, we typically don't see both the GPU and memory prices going up at the same exact time, but we are now. A new Reuters report claims that AMD and Intel are also, quote, warning of delivery lead times of up to 6 months, end quote, for CPUs to Chinese customers. The report says that the companies are experiencing supply constraints as a result of AI demand, unsurprisingly. According to Reuters, AMD and Intel have notified B2B customers of an 8 to 10 week delivery window for CPUs right now, which is a lot longer than it used to be. And they're also expecting AMD and Intel, according to this report, improvement in second quarter through 2026, if it goes as I guess they're projecting right now. There's really not much to the report other than that. As for why China would be impacted specifically, I guess a few reasons, probably some of them might have to do with some backroom government discussions. First, the companies may be prioritizing their inventory to different regions if they're constrained on inventory, if they have different deals, contracts, better margin in those other regions, something like that. Secondly, China has been a major consumer of Xeon CPUs in particular. Not sure about the EPYC distribution there, but China also has a growing AI industry that's trying to get online. It, from what I understand, seems to be less obsessively focused on generative AI, but nonetheless, it does have a large AI industry, and China is building its own data centers as well. So there's a lot of CPU demand over there, just like there is here in the US. Up next, a server hosting the Notepad++ website, a shared web hosting server, had a, the brainwaves are gonna leak out of our CEO's figurine from Cherry Tree, by the way. They do cool work. As I was saying, Notepad++ Plus's shared web hosting server was hijacked, and it was used to selectively reroute traffic to deliver a malicious payload to specific targets via Notepad++ Plus's own auto-update process. From what we've read from the developers, the vulnerability wasn't in the code explicitly, but it was instead in a shared web hosting solution, primarily anyway. The malicious payload would set itself up as an ambiguous backdoor that's now been named Chrysalis by cybersecurity firm Rapid7's research team. This infiltration went undetected from sometime in June until September 2nd, 2025, and the server stayed partially compromised until December 2nd, 2025 as well. The attackers pulled an infrastructure-level attack off on one of the servers of a shared web hosting provider for Notepad++. Notepad++ has canceled services with the shared host and migrated servers. The Notepad++ developers wrote, quote, "The compromise occurred at the hosting provider level rather than through vulnerabilities in Notepad++ code itself. Traffic from certain targeted users was selectively redirected to attacker-controlled malicious update manifests," end quote. And Notepad++ called this a, quote, "highly selective attack by a state-sponsored group targeting specific high-value organizations," end quote. "Although everybody should exercise caution and update for safety, the implication from the post is that the average everyday person is not at risk here." The exploit used a mix of the compromised server and insufficient update verification controls on older versions of Notepad++ Plus's WinGup auto updater, causing it to download the malicious payload along with the actual updates. The malware would then deploy the Chrysalis backdoor on the unsuspecting client PC. Notepad++ embedded the web host statement on its security incident page. The web host stated, quote, we discovered the suspicious events in our logs, which indicate that the server where your application was hosted until the 1st of December 2025 could have been compromised. As a precautionary measure, we immediately transferred all clients' web hosting subscriptions from this server to a new server and continued our further investigation," end quote. The statement from the web host goes into 4 points and subpoints with detail, but we'll just kind of briefly focus on a few of them. The shared hosting server, quote, in question was compromised until the 2nd of September 2025. On this particular date, the server had scheduled maintenance where the kernel and firmware were updated. After this, we could not identify any similar patterns in logs, and this indicates that bad actors have lost access to the server. Even though the bad actors lost access to the server from the 2nd of September 2025, they maintained the credentials of our internal services existing on that server until the 2nd of December, which could have allowed the malicious actors to redirect some of the traffic going to the Notepad++ download page to their own servers and return the update's download URL with compromised updates. Based on our logs, we see no other clients hosted on this particular server being targeted. The bad actors specifically searched for Notepad++ domain with the goal to intercept the traffic to their website. As they might know, the then existing Notepad++ vulnerabilities related to insufficient update verification controls, end quote. The host noted that it fixed the vulnerabilities, stating it has logs, quote, indicating that the bad actor tried to re-exploit one of the fixed vulnerabilities. However, the attempt did not succeed after the fix was implemented, end quote. The Notepad++ dev stated that he resolved the issue with the auto-updater as of 8.8.9, with more verifications coming from the 8.9.2 update in about a month. The dev also claims that the vast majority of Notepad++ users were never affected because the attackers filtered based on strategic value. The dev says that the issue is fully resolved at this point, updating should be sufficient for protection, and you can disable auto-updates if desired. Check the Notepad++ news page for any further updates on that. But Rapid7 wrote this of the exploit, quote, Chrysalis uses legitimate binaries to sideload a crafted DLL with a generic name, which makes simple file name-based detection unreliable. It relies on custom API hashing in both the loader and the main module, each with its own resolution logic. This is paired with layered obfuscation and a fairly structured approach to C2 communication, end quote. The Rapid7 team published a technical deep dive stating its belief that the attackers are part of what they say is a well-established Lotus Blossom group from China, active since, they say, 2009, quote, the group is known for its targeted espionage campaigns, primarily impacting organizations across Southeast Asia and more recently Central America, focusing on government, telecom, aviation, critical infrastructure, and media sectors, end quote. I'm going to need more of the hats to just, it should probably be like issued. It's like a, like when you get your key to get into the building for a company, we're just going to start issuing tinfoil hats now. The technical descriptor goes beyond our technical abilities for specific software security research, not something we specialize in. So instead, I'm going to read what Rapid7 wrote directly here that I thought was the most interesting, at least from a technical standpoint. So any of you who may be in the security field, you can kind of get at least the top level there, and then you should read their update in our sources doc below if you want to get the full details. So they said this, quote, instead of relying on common hashing algorithms, the routine employs multi-stage arithmetic, mixing with constants of murmur hash style finalization. API names are processed in 4-byte blocks using multiple rotation and multiplication steps, followed by a final diffusion phase before comparison with the supplied hash. This design significantly complicates static recovery of resolved APIs and reduces the effectiveness of traditional signature-based detection. As a fallback, the resolver supports direct resolution via get proc address if the target hash is not found through the hashing method. The pointer to get proc address is obtained earlier during the main module preparation stage, end quote. And all of this comes after an earlier Notepad++ news update titled Authentically Guaranteed, regarding obtaining a signed certificate from GlobalSign. The update included the statement, quote, permanently resolve all concerns regarding the authenticity and integrity of Notepad++ releases, end quote. Really bad timing on that. Now, these parties all seem confident that this would only intercept high-value specific strategic targets by this group that they think did it. If you're using Notepad++ to update your Skyrim ENB profiles, probably you're fine. I mean, maybe the group finds high value in that. ENB is kind of a huge pain in the ass to tune when you don't know what you're doing. So I guess it's possible they compromised all of Notepad++ just to make that easier. Probably banks are more interesting, and governments and media and infrastructure, but also possibly Skyrim ENB mods. Either way, though, probably worth updating, although that is not to say your Skyrim save is not high value. I don't mean to offend anyone. There's probably some pretty high value Skyrim saves out there. Up next, Thermal Grizzly CEO and mad scientist Der Bauer posted a video about prices and increases to raw material supply that will impact the consumer hardware industry, but also everything else that uses metal. So most stay the fuck away from my hat, all right? We're putting this in a safe. That's what we're doing. Roman has the unique position of being well-informed on the supply side while also having a media platform to talk about it, which a lot of these companies don't share too transparent information about their pricing, but he does here. The video is linked in our sources document if you want the full video, but he stated this in it.
Raw material pricing absolutely exploded, and this will have more negative effects on our industry. That moment in October, I was not prepared for a sudden copper shortage here in Europe. I was absolutely not prepared for that. And then when we talked to the suppliers, they also said that they have no clue when it's going to be better when it comes to availability.
Der Bauer runs Thermal Grizzly, including its factories that we visited previously. We have 3 tour videos of Roman's thermal paste, liquid metal, and CNC factory production lines near Berlin in Germany, where the company consumes large amounts of copper, aluminum, and other metals to manufacture its products. Roman showed his warehouse and said prior 1 to 2 week lead times have increased now to upwards of 4 months. He said that October materials requests from suppliers were met with delivery expectations for February, rather than later October, early November, we'd guess. Roman also showed a large copper plate that weighs over 15 kilograms, stating that Thermal Grizzly uses one of these plates at a cost of 190 euros per plate to manufacture 4 big cold plates, he said, for GPU blocks. He stated that a secondary raw copper supplier is citing a 280 euro cost for the same plate that previously was 190 euros. Roman noted a 30% price increase in copper when calculated with the more stable euro, as opposed to a close to 50% increase when using the rapidly plummeting US dollar. Roman also found that while some materials remained flat, tin had gone up by 80% in USD. Is this actually aluminum or is it tin? It says aluminum foil, but I really wanted I think the hats only work if they're tin, and tin's really expensive right now, so if this is actually aluminum, hopefully it works. Hopefully we don't have a Notepad++ situation where one of the AI companies hacks my aluminum foil hat or something, intercepts it to send programming to my brain. Everyone loves AI. You should only buy AI. To expand on Roman's work, almost everything in computing uses copper and tin. Data centers, in particular, are a heavy driver of copper, right now especially, with the obscene power delivery and HVAC requirements alone, not even getting to the computer parts, consuming endless copper for wiring and cooling the data centers. There's probably thousands and thousands of miles of copper just for the wiring of the buildings that these are hosting for the computers. That's not factoring in the cooling solutions for the computers themselves, like the large copper water blocks found in data center cooling or copper cold plate and aluminum fin stack assemblies. All the PCBs needed to form a single server blade also use copper for traces, tin, copper, ceramic, and aluminum for the various MOSFETs, capacitors, inductor coils, and I.O. Although less prevalent, sort of, computers use gold for pins, contacts, and pads, and gold has also skyrocketed over 70% in the past year or so. Silver, in particular, is heavily utilized in data centers, with First Gold Group noting that this is mostly for what they say are relays, circuit breakers for high voltage supply, and bus bars alongside networking equipment. Back to Roman's report, he noted high levels of copper warehouse stock, despite high prices. Roman thinks this is attributable to the US tariff uncertainty, alongside some other factors he lays out we'll leave for you in his video. Now, on the tariff side, that's something we've covered extensively at this point with 2 videos in a series that I think total over 5 hours at this point. The first one's the main one to watch, so if you haven't seen it, it's still relevant, sadly. But the dozen or so manufacturers we interviewed at the time were talking about how the long-term latent impact remained an unpredictable concern for them, and the unpredictability was the big problem with the tariffs rollout. Not necessarily the percentages themselves, although the 100%+ and the random number generator approach to the tariffs percentage didn't seem to make people happy either, but it was really the consistency that was the big problem at the time. And we're starting to see the latent impact now, finally, almost a year after we did that video. And unfortunately, since there are no non-clowns left in the clown car, we are in a situation where we don't see the issues of uncertainty improving anytime soon. Up next, we just talked about this in our recent video about the panicking AI companies, but we'll go over it again briefly here. So there's a rumor that the 50 Super Series will be delayed again. It's already been reportedly delayed multiple times at this point. There were early rumors about maybe a launch fourth quarter 2025. first quarter of 2026. There are rumors of a January CES launch. CES, of course, standing for Consumers Eat Shit Show. And that didn't happen. So it's looking like a potential delay. The Information, which is a publication, reports also that the 60 series may be delayed past the original launch targets and into late 2027, suggesting between the lines maybe 2028. The Information is paywalled, but the report cites the memory shortage as the reason for this. The rumor claims that NVIDIA had plans to release an incremental update codenamed Kicker to its GPU lineup. This probably would have been the RTX 50 Super Series, and that design, the rumor says, was done. The post reads, quote, "But in December, NVIDIA managers changed plans, telling employees and suppliers the company was delaying Kicker without offering a new timeline. NVIDIA managers said one reason was due to the global memory shortages, which have pushed up prices, and the need to prioritize memory production for the company's AI chip business," according to the two individuals, they say. "The delay will also push back the release of NVIDIA's next-generation gaming GPU. Likely called the RTX 60 series, it was originally scheduled to begin mass production at the end of 2027, according to one of the people," end quote. This corroborates an earlier rumor from January that the RTX 50 Super Series was canceled. Delaying the 60 series past the first quarter of 2027 would actually start to set some records for a while anyway for NVIDIA, where the gen-to-gen development time that we've recorded at GN was for a while 18 months or so, and then they trended towards 24, where they were sometimes plus, they were like 27, sometimes they were like 22 or something. So they went from 18 to about 24-month cadence, and more recently they've been slowly moving towards this 27-month cadence. Now, if NVIDIA goes beyond 27 months, that would be later into 2027 from the January 2025 release date for the 50 series, and that would be new for them, or at least new in kind of the relevant timescale that we've covered. So up next, Microsoft and Firefox are reevaluating their approach to AI features that no one wants. This time, they are not going to shoehorn as much of it in and ruin their software as much. According to Windows Central, Microsoft, quote, plans changes to streamline or even remove certain AI features where they don't make sense, end quote, which is anywhere, and has, quote, paused work on any additional Copilot buttons for inbox apps, end quote, for the time being. Getting rid of AI features in Windows at this point would just mean that Windows 11 vanishes. Like, that we go back to XP maybe, although the malware was not particularly good for XP. Maybe 7 if you're kind of a fan of that era. Could go back to 98 and then you get the nice crisp Windows UI elements, I guess. But either way, depending on how you feel about the vulnerabilities, going backwards in time seems like the easiest way to ditch the Windows 11 AI feature at this point. But another piece of information obtained by Windows Central is that internally, Microsoft considers recall a failure, but it's looking at ways to revamp it rather than call it quits, Windows Central says. To us, recall, which is the thing that screenshots your whole desktop and then tries to guess at which things you don't want screenshotted, is just a ticking time bomb for the worst PC vulnerability in history. So not pursuing it would be ideal. Alternatively, it'd be pretty useful to the feds, who've already obtained BitLocker keys from Microsoft when those keys were stored on things like, I think it was OneDrive. So if you're storing your encryption keys on cloud storage providers, you may want to stop doing that. Other so-called AI so-called features, including semantic search, agentic workspace, Windows ML, and Windows AI APIs, are still in development, per Windows Central, despite Microsoft's apparent change in stance. This comes after Microsoft made a statement to The Verge, quote, "The feedback we're receiving from our community of passionate customers and Windows insiders has been clear. We need to stop sucking." No, it doesn't say that. "We need to improve Windows in ways that are meaningful for people." That's right. Meaningful for people. As opposed to the whatever else they were doing the improvements for. Shareholders, I guess. "This year, they say, you will see us focus on addressing pain points we hear consistently from customers, improving system performance, reliability, and the overall experience of Windows," end quote. So while Microsoft figures out and optimizes the maximum amount of pain that we'll tolerate as users, Mozilla has already taken similar measures to ease its own attitude towards AI in web browsers, specifically generative AI and Firefox. Mozilla is the latest clown to get into the car for AI, and in a new blog post, it looks like they might be looking back towards their non-clown ways. Mozilla outlines a new toggle that will disable any and all AI features within Firefox from a single place. This toggle will appear February 24th as part of Firefox 148. The change comes after the community expressed its discontent with Mozilla's AI push and Mozilla's new CEO stating that Firefox will, quote, evolve into a modern AI browser, end quote, whatever the fuck that means. A Firefox developer posted online to say they're, quote, not asking for faith in our direction, but I do ask that you don't have the opposite of faith, end quote, and that they, quote, hope we regain your trust here, end quote. It's kind of like we hope they have the opposite of artificial intelligence. The dev made a commitment that all AI features in Firefox will be opt-in from now on. Next, we have a collection of quick stories in the hardware space. So Fractal has an actual product. It's crazy, I know. They have a new case you can buy to look at when you eventually want to imagine putting RAM in it as part of your PC building fantasy that we all have to live these days. Fractal Design is launching a new North Momentum Edition case. It's got some different fans in it as well from the North, and it is in both standard and XL sizes. The main changes are a totally blacked out look with blackened oak front slats and the inclusion of Fractal's high performance Momentum 12 fans with LCP blades and fluid dynamic bearings. As a positive, this case will also have the best airflow you've ever seen because there won't be RAM sticks in the way of the CPU tower. Everything else about the Momentum Edition is standard North, as far as we can tell. The standard North Momentum is priced at $180. The XL one is at $210. These might be good candidates for blackout, zero RGB builds, we think. Next in the rapid roundup here, ASRock and the AM5 murder board update. The CPU killing problem seems to continue to not be killed, but the latest update from ASRock has some news. I was going to modify it with, like, good, but it's more just news. Quote, ASRock is closely monitoring recent discussions regarding the performance and behavior of AMD 9000 series processors on ASRock AMD platforms. In response to these reports, we've implemented comprehensive internal reviews and rigorous verification processes. We have been working in seamless coordination with AMD continuously to further validate system performance across a wide range of hardware configurations while optimizing BIOS and enhancing overall system stability. End quote on that. It's good that ASRock's working with AMD directly at this point. We already knew they were working with AMD directly on the murder boards, but now they're talking about it more. ASRock has been doing a lot of monitoring in the past year, and it'd be nice to see some actual fixing at some point. The issue really for them has been openly communicating, where they keep saying they're doing it, but they really don't. I mean, they're not like actually communicating anything that they should be. It's all just kind of very vague and ambiguous and unhelpful to people. But ASRock encourages users experiencing these issues to reach out to the technical support department so that you can be ignored. That's it for this one. Thanks for watching. Subscribe for more as always. Go to store.cameraaccess.net to support us directly, like through the AI Dystopia campaign. We have a lot more videos on that, again, coming up. And you can go to patreon.com/gamersnexus to help us out there as well by throwing us a few bucks each month. And subscribe for more. We'll see you all next time.